This is For the Record, program number 1128, titled Bio-Psyop Apocalypse Now, Part 4, Apartheid Virus, question mark. This is being recorded on May 3rd of the year 2020. This program is one that, the research that I am going to be presenting was rather like a snowball that began rolling downhill and developed its own momentum. At the beginning of For the Record, program number 1127, Bio-Psyop Apocalypse Now, Part 3, the eugenic virus, I mentioned a report carried in many media voices, including the New York Times, about random testing of New Yorkers that indicated that up to a fifth of New Yorkers may well have been infected with the virus that produces COVID-19. I believe this is called SARS-CoV-2. Obviously, the strain in question was a relatively mild one. Most of the people either experienced a mild flu-like or cold-like upper respiratory infection or were not symptomatic at all. Obviously, many people also have gotten terribly ill with the disease, particularly if they had other underlying complicating medical conditions. The point that I made in that program was that if that study is accurate, and it appears to be at least in the general ballpark of 20%, it is epidemiologically absurd to believe that that virus came from China. A more recent study in Germany indicated that perhaps up to 1.8 million people in Germany had been infected. And again, many of those people had not been symptomatic or gotten terribly ill or ill at all. If 20% of New York City residents are in fact or have been infected, that is 1.5 million people. And in that program I cited, and I will repeat again in this program, an experiment that was run in 1965 in which light bulbs filled with a harmless bacterium were dropped by intelligence community and military experimenters onto the subway tracks in New York City, and the resulting spores were spread around by the trains themselves. The test indicated that up to a million people would have been killed had those been deadly spores. Was also revisiting someone that we've looked at in the past, a veteran biological warfare researcher and military veteran named Stephen Hatfield. By the way, it's S-T-E-V-E-N, last name H-A-T as in Thomas, F-I-L-L. Hatfield was initially focused upon as a suspect in the anthrax attacks in 2001. Eventually, he was cleared. It turns out that he had more connections than a switchboard. We will talk about some of those. He also, as we have spoken about in For the Record program number 642, among others, and we will come back to that, he had worked in South Africa and have links, according to a book called The Enemy of My Enemy, with an organization called White Afrikaner Resistance, or AWB. Another article that appeared about Hatfield in 2003 in Vanity Fair mentioned his work for the SEALUS Scouts in Rhodesia. Rhodesia now is called Zimbabwe. It was a white supremacist, apartheid-style government. And there was a brutal civil war there, and the SEALUS scouts were one of the military cadres of the Rhodesian apartheid with a small A regime. With affiliations like that, and apparently political views like that, Stephen Hatfield is certainly a very, very interesting individual. He did an appearance on Steve Bannon's podcast, and Hatfield threw cold water, in fact, was openly derisive of the notion that the SARS-CoV-2/COVID-19 virus could have come from a laboratory. This is now a meme that is being disseminated, actually actively pushed by the Trump administration and others. We touched on that as well in our last program, and we will come back to that next week as well. There is so much going on with this pandemic and the political ramifications of it. There is no way I can just keep up with this with 1 hour of radio a week. Please use the SpitfireList.com website and the Terrafractal, the contributing editor, that's capital P-T-E-R-R-A-F-R-A-C-T-Y-L, is doing some landmark work in that regard. When Bannon suggested that this, and this is a common element, not only Trumpian propaganda, it has also been bandied about by conservative / right-wing forces in Australia, as we looked at last week, in France, Britain, and Germany. There have been suggestions that the Chinese covered up that this virus was accidentally released by a lab in Wuhan. By the way, that is being termed a biological warfare research laboratory. It actually was not, as we'll see in our next program. It was not only a virological lab, but the gain of function experiment or manipulation that I have spoken about in For the Record programs of 1121, among others, was actually conducted, that one done by Ralph Barrich. We also talked about that in For the Record 1124. That was actually done in conjunction with, that was at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, but it was done in conjunction with the Wuhan Virological Laboratory that has been the focal point of controversy. In fact, there has been quite a bit of joint American and Chinese research into, among other things, bat-borne coronaviruses, as we looked at in For the Record 1119 and 1120. DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, has been heavily involved in that research. The suggestion by Steve Bannon that the virus was perhaps genetically mutated in that laboratory for biological warfare purposes and then escaped, or that it came out of that laboratory, was derisively dismissed by Stephen Hatfield. As we will see next week, there is plenty of reason to question whether or not that virus was in fact genetically manipulated. The fact of the matter is that with contemporary gene editing technology, any virus can be synthesized in a laboratory starting from scratch. The technology might be seen as analogous to the 3D printer technology with which one can make a serviceable firearm. So the claim that the virus couldn't have been made in the laboratory or wasn't made in the laboratory simply is not one that can be made truthfully, simply because any virus can be synthesized from scratch in a laboratory. We're going to talk about that technology. We talked about it in For the Record 282, among others, and we came back to it in For the Record 1121 and 1124. It has been That technology was warned about when it first was emergent as offering terrible possibilities for biological warfare. We'll talk about that next week as well. When Steve Bannon brought this up, Stephen Hatfill, again, just said that's a bunch of them, used language I can't necessarily use on the air, and said that the websites that Steve Bannon had been citing were, quote, crackpot, unquote, websites. Stephen Hatfill is a brilliant individual, and he also, very obviously, as we will see, is a veteran covert operator, and if in fact he knew that such a virus had in fact or certainly could be made in the laboratory genetically modified, and if for the sake of argument that organism had been used in the covert operation, and if Hatfill was aware of it, it would be standard plausible deniability, as it is called, for a highly intelligent and veteran covert operator like Stephen Hatfill, and he is, to basically throw cold water on that assertion. As I mentioned last week, the disclosure that up to one-fifth of New Yorkers had been infected with the virus, many of them not getting sick or becoming only mildly ill, is epidemiologically absurd if we are to assume that the virus originated in China. It is now being said, perhaps accurately, that the strain of COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2 present in New York City came from Europe. But if that virus came from Europe, again, the virus did not come from China, not with a fifth of New Yorkers infected. That's roughly 1.5 million people. Now, in the passage from Lab 257, and we will review that, it mentioned that the test of biological warfare in the New York City subway system in 1965 would have killed roughly a million people, over a million people. That is roughly the same number of people that have apparently been infected with CoV or with SARS-CoV-2, according to this random testing of New York City residents. I was wondering, and I mused aloud, whether some vectoring technology or methodology had been used to disseminate a relatively one of the milder strains of SARS-CoV-2, and there are various strains, and some of them are quite serious, and some of them are relatively mild. I wonder not only about genetic engineering and the creation of ethno-specific varieties, I also wonder about the possibility of cross-vectoring. But when I was reading about Stephen Hatfill, I was amazed to discover that he was very close to, and in fact was professionally mentored by, to an extent, another veteran biological warfare operator named Bill Patrick. I mean, the last name, P-A-T-R-I-C-K. It was Bill Patrick that oversaw the test in 1965 in New York City. And that led me to pursuing various evidentiary tributaries in the research. And what we're going to be looking at in this program, and I want to emphasize that this is speculative, but we are going to be taking a look at some of the operations of and connections of not only Stephen Hatfill, but also of the late Dr. Larry Ford. He was a Los Angeles physician who had done work with Project Coast. That was the apartheid regime in Africa's biological warfare program. They not only conducted biological warfare against enemies of apartheid, but also in, apparently in neighboring Zimbabwe and elsewhere as well, using, among other organisms or other infectious agents, Ebola. One of the most chilling aspects of Dr. Ford, of the article called Medicine Man from Los Angeles Magazine from 2001 was discussion of an international right-wing, or really I think fascist or Nazi, not Nazi with a capital N, but fascist network connected with Dr. Ford and growing out of Project Coast, and the apartheid regime was discussed. In, for the record, 317, we went into Larry Ford at great length. We have come back to him since. He also was investigated posthumously in connection with the anthrax attacks that took place in 2001. Although he had committed suicide a year earlier, his affiliation, or his affinity, I should say, for works like the Turner Diaries and his networking with various far-right wing activists caused the FBI to look into his situation. In a book that we dealt with at great length in, for the record, 324, a book called Plague Wars by Jeffrey Goldberg and Tom Mangold. It talked about Project Coast, and it talked about some of the operations in which they engaged, some of the organisms that they used, including Ebola. And it also mentioned a post apartheid regime, international underground network, a very formidable, lethal organization that they termed the Third Force, or Die Organisatie. That would be D-I-E-O-R-G-A-N-A-S-I-S. I will spell it for you. It was, well, I'll get to that as I read this, but it was O-R-G-A-N-I-S-A-S-I-E. This appears to have been an underground post-apartheid regime iteration of the Bruderbond organization. That is the core organization of the apartheid regime in South Africa, and it was affiliated with and reorganized along the lines of the NSDAP, the German Nazi Party. A German intelligence officer named Graf Durkheim von Montmartin was the person who, the chief liaison between the NSDAP and the Bruderbond, and he reorganized the Bruderbond. The Afrikaners were of Dutch extraction. They fought against the British colonial masters of South Africa during the Boer War. They also, many of them, fought the British during World War I in alliance with the Germans. We have talked about the Bruderbond and South Africa in a number of programs. And as I mentioned in For the Record 324, the post war, quote, third force, or unquote, or Die Organisatie, appears to be at one level an altogether lethal and formidable post-apartheid regime underground Bruderbond, and I believe almost certainly it is the South African slash Afrikaner branch of the remarkable and deadly Poorman organization that we have spoken about so many times. Now, in this program, we are going to take a look at the possibility that an organization like that, the network that was alluded to in the article about Larry Ford, and that was characterized as the Third Force, or the Organisatie, by several people, including a Swiss intelligence officer named Jürgen Jacome, that's J-U-E-R-G-E-N, last name capital J-A-C-O-M-E-T. We are going to speculate about the possibility of such an organization perhaps having been incorporated into the covert operation pantheon that has been at the epicenter of which, I should say, is Steve Bannon, as we have spoken about so many times. One of the areas in which China has been gaining considerable influence is in Africa. And if, in fact, a group like the Organisation, or the Third Force, as it was called, did indeed plan on returning to a white-dominated South Africa and or Rhodesia and or Angola, certainly blunting Chinese influence, I think, would certainly be something that they would take an active interest in. And as we have looked at, and as we will look at again in other programs, there is the COVID-19 outbreak did not occur in a vacuum, but rather took place in the middle of a whole concert of anti-Chinese operations, some of them covert operations, regime change operations like the World Uyghur Congress, some of the activities in Hong Kong, and more overt anti-Chinese activities such as the trade war in which Trump engaged, the fingering of Chinese operatives for allegedly having performed the Equifax hack in 2017, expelling Chinese journalists, and the sanctions against the Huawei Chinese electronics company, and also a proposed Commerce Department sanctions against the sale of certain kinds of technology to China as well. The Trump administration is now incorporating an anti-Chinese theme, so to speak, to not only its foreign policy, but that is twined with the Trump campaign. And in turn, Barack Obama and Joe Biden are being smeared with the China, quote, red brush, unquote, not unlike the way the China lobby in the McCarthy period tarred people with the commie brush as well. Now, this is obviously a speculative program. One of the things that I note as well, this past week, remdesivir has been approved as a treatment for COVID-19 or for SARS-CoV-2 infection. It is only marginally effective. It apparently does reduce the sickness to a certain extent, does not reduce fatality by very much at all. There is, to put it mildly, a very mixed bag of results on remdesivir. However, it has now been approved. It was originally a drug that was tested and, quote, fizzled, unquote, for treating Ebola. And as we will see, Ebola was one of the agents used by Project Coast, allegedly in cooperation with people from Fort Detrick. In this program, we are going to be looking at a number of sources. I'm going to make a number of different, I will highlight a number of different elements of discussion. The sources. First, Lab 257, The Disturbing Story of the Government's Secret Plum Island Germ Laboratory by Michael Christopher Carroll. Copyright 2004 by Michael Christopher Carroll and published in hardcover by HarperCollins. Now, about Stephen Hatfield, we're going to draw on material from a Vanity Fair article from October of 2003 by Don Foster, F-O-S-T-E-R, titled "The Message in the Anthrax." For information about Larry Ford, we are going to draw on, first of all, the aforementioned article from Los Angeles Magazine from July of 2001 by Edward Humes, H-U-M-E-S, called "The Medicine Man." We also I'm going to excerpt a New York Times article from November 3rd of 2002 called "California Doctor's Suicide Leaves Many Troubling Mysteries Unsolved," up by Joe, J-O, Thomas, again that from the New York Times, of November 3rd of 2002, and for information about Project Coast, about the Organisation and related topics, we will be drawing on the book Plague Wars, The Terrifying Reality of Biological Warfare by Tom Mangold and Jeff Goldberg, copyright 1999 in hardcover by Tom Mangold and Jeff Goldberg, published in hardcover by St. Martin's Press in 1999. So those are the sources. Now, points of information. Again, noting that there was a report that up to a fifth of people in New York City, that would be ballpark 1.5 million people, have apparently been infected with COVID, with the SARS-CoV virus that produces COVID-19. That came from the aforementioned Lab 257, and reading about that. No, that came from the New York Times, but I speculated in our last program, again, that the number of people infected, which was, you know, somewhere in the ballpark figure of 1.5 million people, that would be about 20% of the population of New York City at the moment. That was roughly the over 1 million people that would have been killed in this test in 1965. Of that test, from Lab 257. In the summer of 1965, special operations men walked into three New York City subway stations and tossed light bulbs filled with Bacillus subtilis, S-U-B-T-I-L-I-S, a benign bacteria, onto the tracks. The subway trains pushed the germs through the entire system and theoretically killed over 1 million passengers. Now, bear in mind that as some of the historical context to this, at the end of World War II, the U.S. incorporated the meat of not only the Japanese 731 biological warfare program, but many of the key researchers who had committed war crimes for Nazi Germany. For the record, 1123, we looked at the fact that five of the doctors who were in the defendant's dock for having performed lethal medical experiments on inmates at Dachau had already signed paperclip contracts, and the Heidelberg branch of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Aeromedical Medicine basically maintained a continuous function from the Third Reich right on up through the American Army Air Force in the summer and early fall of 1945. That is some of the historical background. But when people say, well, they wouldn't do that, well, look at the people we're talking about. Perhaps time permitting, we'll also talk about Dr. Kurt Blome as well, someone we looked at in For the Record 912, For the Record 1012, and in particular in AFA program number 39 from late May of 2017. Now, about Larry Ford, again, he had worked for the CIA in South Africa as part of the Project Coast biological warfare program that was executed by the apartheid regime of South Africa. Woucher, W-O-U-C-E-R, Basson, B-A-S-S-O-N, was the guy in charge of that. And Larry Ford worked for the for and with Project Coast, and did so under the auspices of CIA. He also was basically a fascist. Now, from the aforementioned article, again, the New York Times article, California Doctor's Suicide Leaves Many Troubling Mysteries Unsolved, from the New York Times of November 3rd of 2002, we read, speaking of Dr. Ford, he had held extreme racist views and had once told a girlfriend that to understand him, she should read the Turner Diaries, the anti-Semitic and white supremacist novel popular among far-right groups that prosecutors say inspired the Oklahoma City bombing. More about Dr. Larry Ford. Again, he committed suicide in 2000, but his views and his networking and his expertise caused the FBI to look into any possible connection he may have had with the aforementioned anthrax attacks in 2001. Stephen Hatfield was investigated in connection with those attacks and ultimately was cleared. From the Joe Thomas article from the Times, perhaps the deepest fear in the entire affair was that Dr. Ford had been working with anthrax. That trail, too, has run cold. After Dr. Ford's suicide, the police got tips that he had buried anthrax in a gold mine. They searched fruitlessly in California. 4 months later, documents in the Nevada trash dump showed that Dr. Ford had been in touch with people involved in anti-PACs and anti-government groups. In December of 2000, investigators searched a derelict gold milling site outside Henderson, Nevada. They found a separator funnel, a white liquid, and Dr. Ford's business card. A federal agent said they also found directions for making chemical and biological weapons, including anthrax. But that was all. The site's proprietor had recently died of unrelated causes, so that trail went cold. Now, from the aforementioned The Medicine Man from Los Angeles Magazine, this by Edward Humes, H-U-M-E-S, from July of 2001, Ford did work with Project Coast under the auspices of CIA. But 10 minutes later, the liaison called again and said there was, quote, high confidence, unquote, that Ford had biological and chemical weapons knowledge and did, in fact, have the capability to coat the knife with a deadly toxin. Shortly after that, a third call came in. Ford did work for the CIA, the chastened FBI official told the room full of cops. Now, in that Medicine Man article from Los Angeles Magazine by Edward Humes, in the latter part of the article was discussion of a U.S. Air Force Academy report on Project Coast that discussed an international right-wing network that grew out of the South African bioweapons program with which Larry Ford had worked under the auspices of CIA. According to a recent U.S. Air Force Academy report on South Africa's biological warfare program, Ford was part of a global network of scientists that Wouter Bassin assembled to assist Project Coast. Whether that meant creating or receiving and storing toxins produced by the program is a matter of conjecture, the report suggests, as South African officials had been unable to account for all of the dangerous material produced over the years. The Air Force report quotes testimony from a Swiss intelligence agent. And again, I wonder if that is Jürgen Jakomet, who is named in the Plague Wars book. More about that later. The Air Force report quotes testimony from a Swiss intelligence agent who laundered money for Bassin and who describes a worldwide conspiracy involving unnamed Americans. Quote, the death of Dr. Ford and revelations of his South African involvement, the report states, raises the possibility of a right-wing international network still unified by a vision of South Africa once again ruled by whites. Now again, about Stephen Hatfield. This from The Message in the Anthrax by Don Foster from Vanity Fair, October of 2003. Hatfield also was a biological warfare expert. Again, with more connections than a switchboard, as we will see. He had apparently worked not only with South Africa, but also with Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe. Quoting from the Message in the Anthrax Vanity Fair article, here is a fellow, Hatfield, with a fake PhD who posed for the Washington Times as a bioterrorist with a homemade plague disseminator and who boasted as recently as last year of having served with the apartheid government's notorious CELOUS, S-E-L-O-U-S, scouts during the Rhodesian anthrax epidemic. I have three different editions of his curriculum vitae. How did such a rascal come to be instructing, now listen to this, how did such a rascal come to be instructing the CIA, the FBI, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the U.S. Marshals, and the State Department on such matters as the handling of deadly pathogens and of bioterror incidents? Well, obviously, he is well-connected with Alphabet Soup. My guess is that he's CIA, but he may be, who knows? He also worked, by the way, for the Army with the Army's Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, and the CDC shut that down in early August of last year for safety violations. Now, from the book The Enemy of My Enemy, and that was authored by George Michael, copyright 2006 by the University Press of Kansas. And the investigation into Hatfield in 2001, or in connection with the 2001 anthrax attacks. And by the way, Hatfield was working with the CELOUS scouts when an anthrax outbreak in what is now Zimbabwe had devastating effects. There was a boast made not only by Larry Ford, but also by his girlfriend, who was a bird of a similar political feather, that Ford had apparently been involved in wiping out an entire village, perhaps using anthrax as well. From The Enemy of My Enemy, The Enemy of My Enemy, the FBI's investigation of the anthrax attacks, this time focused on Dr. Stephen J. Hatfield, who once worked as a research scientist at the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Disease at Fort Detrick, Maryland. Hatfield had spent considerable time in South Africa and was affiliated with the Afrikaner Resistance Movement, or AWB. However, after a thorough investigation, the FBI eventually cleared Hatfield of any connection to the anthrax attacks. Now, one of the things I found most interesting and very possibly significant is that whether or not Hatfield himself was involved or whether he may have provided advice to elements that were involved with Vector in New York City, or whether elements that did such a thing, if that was done, and I believe that was done, drew their inspiration from Hatfield and perhaps his mentor. He was, as I said, very close to and mentored by a guy named Bill Patrick, who oversaw the 1965 attack on the New York City subway. Again, from the message in the anthrax. Then there's the 1965 simulated attack on the New York City subway. On June 8th of that year, under Bill Patrick's direction, the subway was targeted with the anthrax simulant BG. Light bulbs, each containing 87 trillion spores, were dropped onto the tracks. Trains then sucked the clouds of live bacteria into the subway system. CIA and military scientists bearing fake IDs were on location to count the spores. More than a million riders were exposed to BG that day. Many inhaled more than a million spores per minute. Patrick, when telling this story, still chuckles about how, quote, we clobbered the Lexington line with BG, unquote, one more time. Then there's a 1965 simulated attack on the New York City subway. On June 8th of that year, under Bill Patrick's direction, the subway was targeted with the anthrax simulant BG. Light bulbs, each containing 87 trillion spores, were dropped onto the tracks. Trains then sucked the clouds of live bacteria into the subway system. CIA and military scientists bearing fake IDs were on location to count the spores. More than a million riders were exposed to BV that day. Many inhaled more than a million spores per minute. Patrick, when telling the story, still chuckles about how, quote, we clobbered the Lexington line with BG. And although there was a vast age difference between them, Patrick and Hatfield were professionally close and actually described as sort of a Batman and Robin team. Again, from the message in the Anthrax. The most curious piece of fieldwork noted on Stephen Hatfield's most recent CD is that of open-air testing and vulnerability trials, unquote. In the 2001 paper Biological Warfare Scenarios, Bill Patrick called the 1965 simulated attack on the New York subway, quote, one of the most important vulnerability studies of the 70 he conducted. By 1998, Hatfield was Patrick's sidekick in what one colleague has described as a Batman and Robin team. But it is from U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases that Hatfield claims to have acquired his working knowledge of Army-sponsored vulnerability trials. He was eventually fired by USAMRIID. Now, again, as mentioned in this 2001 paper, Biological Warfare Scenarios, there were four different levels of biological warfare attack. And level four was described as the fourth level, quote, the fourth level consists of a self-sustaining, unstoppable epidemic. And again, I wonder if Hatfield, someone connected to him, or perhaps someone simply drawing their inspiration and operational methodology from Hatfield or like-minded individuals, may have been involved with vectoring New York City. Now, in For the Record 324, we accessed information from the aforementioned book, The Plague Wars, by Tom Mangold and Jeffrey Goldberg. And in that book, there is a lengthy discussion. We went into this at great length in For the Record 324 of Project Coast. Now, bearing in mind the Air Force Academy report on Project Coast that discussed a post-war international network that may very well have appropriated some of the toxic organisms or various part of the biological warfare arsenal that was accumulated for Project Coast and that apparently grew out of that milieu. There is discussion of this altogether deadly and formidable network in the book The Plague Wars, and this was accessed in For the Record 324. It is termed the Spider Network or the Third Force or, quote, the Organizasi, capital D-I-E, capital O-R-G-A-N-I-S-A-S-I-E. Former Project Coast operative Nico Palm, P-A-L-M. Palm spoke enigmatically of the Organizasi, a pulp fiction nom de guerre, which he calls, even more melodramatically, the Spider Network, unquote. Parenthetically, that was also applied to some of the post-World War II international Nazi underground. Continuing. It is a group of white South Africans who wait patiently for the demise of the ANC government and a return to the old days. They are not the mad pseudo-Nazis of the far right, but something far more organized, well-financed, and patient. Other people know them as the Third Force. We are to hear of them time and time again from ex-soldiers like Nico Palm, all the way up to South Africa's Deputy Defense Minister Rami Kasrils, and that's K-A-S-R-I-L-S. Significantly, files have also been opened by MI5, that's British domestic intelligence, in potentially significant union of like-minded, in connection with a potentially significant union of like-minded South African right-wingers. All of them are expats now living in the United Kingdom who may support the destabilization of any black South African government. And there are apparently some Americans connected to or in the organization. Former Swiss intelligence agent Jürgen Jakomet, now nervous, is pressed to expand a little. Quote, "There is a group of people here in London," he says. "One could call them the Friends of South Africa. They have it in mind to see a strong, white South Africa again. There are American connections, too." And more about some of the American connections to the organization. Jakomet mentions some well-known South African names, men previously associated with Third Force activities. He also refers to an American name known to Britain's MI5 for his alleged involvement with Basson in money laundering, sanctions, busting, and biological agents procurement. Once again, the organization is mentioned in respectful tones, and once again, the details remain scant and elusive. By the way, in the aforementioned Medicine Man article, there is a considerable discussion by an FBI informant named Fitzpatrick of how Larry Ford and a guy named Gideon Bauer, a South African attaché, were smuggling biological warfare agents out of the country, and this with the apparent acquiescence of, or bureaucratic acquiescence of, FBI. So whether this is Larry Ford, who is alluded to here or not, is a matter of speculation. It certainly fits the profile of Larry Ford that we went into in For the Record 317, again accessing information from the Medicine Man article by Edward Humes from LA Magazine from July of 2001. Now, when Nelson Mandela was told by British representatives about Project Coast, he was at first very terrified because he heard, he was afraid that South African Third Force elements, including organizations like White Afrikaner Resistance of Eugene Terre Blanche, might get their hands on them. It is that organization, White Afrikaner Resistance, with which Stephen Hatfield is affiliated. Once again, from Plague Wars. In the end, it was British representatives who decided to approach President Mandela with a minimum of fanfare to advise him that he was inheriting an ugly biological assassination program from the previous administrations. Mandela's first reaction was, "Oh my God." He was initially terrified that the South African Third Force elements, including such organizations as Eugene Terre Blanche's ultra-right wing and fanatical AWB, might lay their hands on it. Again, Stephen Hatfield affiliated with that organization. Now, there is evidence here, there certainly is verbal evidence that Ebola was one of the agents used in some of the biological warfare programs in Africa, including in Zimbabwe. And we'll hear about that, we'll read about that from the Medicine Man. Ford told the Rileys and others, his subsequent work for the military and the CIA included research on biological and chemical weapons, consulting on Iraqi capabilities during the Gulf War, and sneaking into epidemic hot zones in Africa to gather samples of such killer organisms as the Ebola and Marburg viruses. And Dr. Stamps, that's S-T-A-M-P-S, who was the health minister of Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, where Stephen Hatfield worked for the SELOS, or worked with the SELOS scouts. He was very suspicious about Ebola having been used in Zimbabwe. Again, from the Plague Wars, and then quoting Dr. Stamps, "I have my suspicions about Ebola, too. It developed along the line of the Zambezi River, and I suspect that this may have been an experiment to see if a new virus could be established to infect people. We looked on the serological evidence on strange cases, including a 15-year-old child which occurred in 1980. Nothing really made epidemiological sense. Do I have evidence? Only circumstantial. In fact, the Rhodesian security forces were more expert than the Nazis at covering up evidence. And from the plague wars, then a veteran of Project Coast who spoke under the pseudonym of Gert, capital G-E-R-T, not only spoke about Ebola being used in by Project Coast, but alleged that the scientists from Fort Detrick were involved with that. Quoting Gert, "Look, I know what one of the very, very, very secret specialized units had. We had to test it. And that was viral capsules that were specifically related to Congo fever and the hemorrhagic fevers. Ebola? Yes." So Gert is beginning to corroborate Dr. Stant's suspicions in Harare that Ebola and Marburg, although indigenous, were also artificially seeded into southern Africa. Wilfred Basson, says Gert, was involved in all this. When the last terrible Ebola outbreak occurred in Zikwit, Zaire, or Kikwit, K-I-K-W-I-T, Zaire, as late as 1995, Gert claims that Basson was there unofficially. 20 years earlier, when the village of Yambuku, capital Y-A-M-B-U-K-K-U, in northern Zaire witnessed one of the first major Ebola outbreaks, two South African scientists were there, allegedly working hand in glove with U.S. military personnel from Fort Detrick. Now, again, whether there is a connection or not, a drug developed by Gilead Sciences to combat Ebola, and which turned out not to be successful, a drug called Remdesivir, has, despite some very modest and contradictory test results, been approved for treating COVID-19. Now, that drug is made by Gilead Sciences. That has been a major investment vehicle for hedge funds and for Renaissance Technologies in particular. Renaissance Technologies is the hedge fund of Robert Mercer, formerly Steve Bannon's financial angel, a financier of Breitbart, and one of the principal people involved in the Cambridge Analytica affair along with Steve Bannon, the current manager of Donald Trump's re-election campaign, is a veteran of Cambridge Analytica. Now, the Remdesivir and Gilead Sciences, the drug Remdesivir made by Gilead Sciences, which again, a major, by the way, that man's name is Brad Pascale, P-A-S-C-A-L-E. He is the veteran of Cambridge Analytica who's managing Trump's campaign. And again, it was Robert Mercer, and Steve Bannon who were deeply involved with, Cambridge Analytica. Gilead Sciences with Remdesivir has not only been a major holding of Renaissance Technologies, but of other hedge funds as well. And as we will see when we get into our BioPsyop Apocalypse Now program about the wealth concentrating virus, it has been Remdesivir which has been a driver of stock market activity during the COVID-19 outbreak. The chairman of the board for many years of Gilead Sciences was Donald Rumsfeld, who left his position as chairman of the board to become Secretary of Defense for George H.W. Bush. Robert Mercer himself has been credibly reported as having some racist views. And Steve Bannon again takes his ideological cues from Julius Evola, an Italian fascist who initially was a follower of Mussolini, but eventually graduated to become an affiliate of the Nazi SS, who were financing his work by the end of World War II. Now, in For the Record program numbers 11, 12, and 11, 13, we discussed, among the programs talking about that, we talked about how one of the concerns of the Trump administration and Mike Pompeo's State Department was Chinese influence in Africa. He made a trip to confer with Kenyan officials about counteracting Chinese influence in Africa, and there was speculation of that the COVID-19 pandemic might wreak havoc in Africa. To date, so far, apparently it has not done a lot of damage. It remains to be seen if that happens. Now, the interest of the right-wing international network discussed in that Air Force Academy report about Project Coast, and the group described ultimately as the Spider Network or the Third Force or the Organisation, was basically a post-apartheid sort of underground Bruderbond network, which was interested in the re-coalescence of a white dominated South Africa. Certainly, burgeoning Chinese influence in Africa might very well be seen as an obstacle to a return to power or of a recoalescence of a white supremacist or apartheid regime in South Africa or in Zimbabwe or Angola or anyone else or anywhere else, I should say, in Africa. One wonders, and again, this entire program is in interrogatory mode, one wonders if that may have had something to do with involvement of elements of that network with Steve Bannon and possibly someone like Stephen Hatfield, or perhaps associates of Stephen Hatfield, or just drawing inspiration from the activities of Stephen Hatfield in the vectoring of New York City with a mild version of, or one of the milder strains of COVID-19. I will also note that one of the things that is producing the highly varied symptoms of COVID-19, it not only affects the lungs, it produces blood clotting, as we looked at last week. It also affects the kidneys. It produces skin rashes. It affects the heart as well. It is affecting a number of different tissues. One of the things that the virus apparently does is to attack the T cells. And those are also the major area of attack by HIV as well. There has been a lot of discussion on various websites of the COVID-19 virus, the SARS-CoV-2, having some of the genetic material from HIV in it. That may be true. A lot of those websites are, shall we say, uneven. I wouldn't necessarily say they were crackpot sites, as some are characterized by Stephen Hatfield, but certainly they are, quote, uneven, unquote. However, in light of the fact that apparently COVID-19 does attack the T cells, and that has something to do with the highly varied symptomatology of the outbreak, well, that is a source of speculation in many programs, including AFA 39, For the Record 1012, or many discussions with Ed Haslam, the author of the consummately important Dr. Mary's Monkey. We have spoken about some of the African roots of HIV and some of the research involved in that. We will come back to that at some point in the not-too-distant future. This concludes For the Record program number 1128, Bio-Psyop Apocalypse Now, Part 4, the apartheid virus question mark. This is being recorded on May 3rd of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.